No matter what business you're in, embracing change is easier said than done. Yet, that's exactly what companies everywhere are facing pressure to do these days. For commercial real estate investors, sustaining their business means adapting to rapidly evolving technology. On this episode, we dig into that dynamic with a leader who decades ago foresaw the potential for things like AI to change the real estate business and is now highly focused on innovating the practice of investing.
My target is the 20% of the people, 25% of the people, the young people, etc., that they're going to buy into this, they're going to be the future of the company, and they're going to help me to drive the innovation metabolism of the organization. And that's exactly what's happening.
That's Ray Amabile, the co-CEO and global CIO of PGIM Real Estate, the third largest real estate investment manager in the world, with assets of more than $210 billion under management. A native of Italy, who's based in London, Ray also co-chairs the board of directors and is one of the visionaries behind Real Asset X, an international innovation lab founded by PGIM in 2023. He'll tell us about its ambitious goal to transform the real estate business and some of the ideas about AI and real estate that he first imagined while writing his PhD thesis 30 years ago. Coming up, we're in London to meet with a leader who's working on the future of real estate investing. We'll hear his perspective on the market today and the work behind his firm's forward-looking project, Real Asset X. I'm Spencer Levy, and that's right now on The Weekly Take. Welcome to The Weekly Take, and we are taping today from London, CBRE's beautiful London headquarters at Henrietta House, and we are delighted to have Ray Amabile with us, the co-CEO and global CIO for PGIM Real Estate. Ray, thanks for coming out.
Thank you for having me.
Delighted to have you here today, Ray. And we're going to talk about your new innovation in a minute, Real Asset X, but I want to talk big picture about the business. So the markets right now have gone through quite a bit of volatility over the last several months. We're recording today in early June 2025. How would you classify the markets today? Just big picture.
I think the best way to look at this is, well, we got into 2025. With a very positive construct, right? You know, we kind of called the bottom of the market coming into 2025. And this was really on the basis of 25, 30% value reset. Of course, cost of capital stabilizing and going down from very strong fundamentals. This mismatch demand supply side on some of these asset classes, which is really driving some of these fundamentals. And of course, some of this liquidity coming back as well. Then, of course, Liberation Day comes in, right? You know, you have all sorts of volatility. You have all sorts of noise, right, in the market. And that's where you need to really be very discerning, right? How are you going to separate the strong signal, which are the one that, you know, I just mentioned, from some of this noise? And also the fact that, you know, the real estate, once you compare the asset class against medium bond, et cetera, we're in a total different shape. Places like global living, last mile logistic, data center, of course, credit, right? It's still one of the best risk-adjusted basic proposition. That's all clear to us. Now, of course, what's happening in the market right now is, well, investors, they bought into the bottom is kind of there. Volatility comes in. They're not in a rush now to allocate, right? So they're more, you know, in a bit of wait and see, right, to some extent. And we're also observing something which is very interesting, right, when it comes to the macro picture, which it's all connected to some extent to the US story. I, you know, for the first time, we're seeing investors which are sort of reallocating capital, right, out of US into places like Europe and Asia. And I believe that you can call this as a structural reallocation to some extent. I don't know to which extent and at which pace, right, this is going to happen, right? And what's finally, right, the landing point there. But certainly there is actually something going on when it comes to where the capital is going, which, of course, you know, will be beneficial for places like Europe and Asia.
And you use a term here I like, structural reallocation. And I would put at the other end of structural, I would say something like temporary reallocation. The market has clearly changed due to what I might call short-term reasons, but I think you're using the term structural reallocation. Yeah. Do you really think these are permanent shifts?
Yeah, so let me put it this way. We've been going around with, for a reason, this U.S. exceptionalism, right, over the last 5 years at least, which basically means, U.S. has attracted 70% of the capital up until a few months ago, if you like. So do I believe that they're going to continue being the recipient of 70% of the capital flow, right, going forward? Probably not. That's the concept of structural allocation, right? You can make a point that they kind of peak, right, at 70%, right? And as the capital is now rethinking in terms of, now diversification probably matters much more than what was the case over the last 10 years. I got to make sure that my rotation is not a rotation within U.S. Across different asset classes, but it's a rotation also, right, coming out of the U.S. into this market. So that is something which we're meeting clients all the time, right? In Europe, you mentioned Asian investors, some of the Middle Eastern, et cetera. There is actually quite a lot of discussion around this. I'll give you a couple of examples, right? Some of these clients, they were like, our priority number one up until 6 months ago was allocating to U.S. market, and then, of course, Europe and Asia was following. Now they're like, actually, we're putting on all that kind of investment, and actually we're now making as a priority, right, an allocation to Europe and to Asia. And when it comes to Europe, often is their domestic market. For example, the Germans, it's a good example of this, right? They're kind of thinking, I'm going to invest more money in my domestic market. And that's the kind of things that we're observing. Of course, if you ask me, what's the landing point, right? The 70% capital peak going down to 50%, 60%, that's the toughest question, right? I don't know what's the landing point, so how much, this structural shift will then land, to a significant reallocation or not a significant reallocation. But we need to think about this. $35 trillion of capital, this is foreign capital invested in U.S. Even a 5% reallocation of $35 trillion, it's a lot of money. And this is just talk about foreign investors in U.S. Imagine if the U.S., they start diversifying as well. So there is actually potentially a big flow of reallocation of capital. And again, what's the final landing point and how long it's going to take? It's difficult to say, but I see this like, a bit of a structural trend.
I think it's a good transition point to talk about your new innovation, Real Asset X. Why don't you tell us what Real Asset X is?
The vision is really based on three realizations, if you like. The first realization is, real estate as an asset class is becoming more and more an operating business, right? I mean, our job as a landlord, right, of real estate asset is actually changing. Now, as every piece of real estate is moving into an operating asset class, you can easily imagine how collecting data and having powerful AI software, which can analyze data, extract all the signal from the data, and making this business becoming a much more operational efficient asset. This is going to drive basically NOI grow, and it's going to drive value creation. By having all these new generation of software helping you, you're going to drive NOI, you're going to drive value. So for me, it's like a very easy concept to understand. Second realization, in a way or another, right, and of course, I appreciate that, different country, they might be in a different situation. We are in the middle of trying to find a solution for, the climate impact, right? And so the fact that, you have to think about coming with the climate tech solution, which will help you to manage the impact, right, of this, climate change, is pretty clear. Now you want to call it sustainability, you want to call it, environmental friendly things. It's all part of the same story. So now in this kind of world, you can easily imagine how new technology, which can help to run an asset in a much more efficient way, which of course means energy saving. New technology which will help to discover more efficient material, which of course is going to drive less energy consumption, more resilient asset, etc. These are clear examples of value creation, which you can drive your asset, your portfolio. And of course, these are all things which needs to be developed, right? And then the last realization, which is really supporting the vision as well, we are in a world where digital infrastructure, real estate, And of course, energy infrastructure. And then when I say energy infrastructure, it's every possible kind of energy, renewable energy and non-renewable energy. They're all converging in the same place. So the vision is, well, this is not a nice to have kind of things. It's actually a transformational change that, you know, if you don't embrace, the result will be that, you know, you're going to be out of the business. And now it might take, you know, longer or shorter, but, you know, that's the direction of travel. This is basically the vision which is underpinning the launching of the lab. We want to create an ecosystem of partners, right? You know, starting from PGIM Real Estate, going to major university, major tech companies, VC, you know, manager. We want to create an ecosystem of partner which is going to help us to identify use cases, you know, develop, you know, some of this idea all the way to commercializing, right, some of this idea. And this is very important, right? Because if you don't have a clear objective that your idea, it needs to be developed with the mindset of being an idea that the market is going to buy, i.e., you know, you're going to have the idea being commercialized and becoming, you know, the new startup and hopefully a big company down the road. I want to really work with all the partners which they're going to drive this innovation with me. I'll give you one good example. The way the partnership with the university, right, on the R&D side of the lab, right, is called PhD Venture.
PhD Ventures?
PhD Ventures. We're basically selecting a PhD student, which they don't want to do just research, but they want to do research on use cases with the aim of them commercializing the idea. And of course, through capital coming from us, capital coming from the VC funds, capital coming from the funds which university, you know, manage, we're going to eventually put some of this business in place. And by the way, we have three projects which are, you know, ongoing right now. And some of them, they got a potential to be commercialized.
Well, let's take a step back. I want to just get the nuts and bolts of exactly what this is, this innovation lab, or its brand name, Real Asset X. What is it? Who are the stakeholders that invented it? Is it a physical place? Is it virtual? Is some of it here in London, some in New York? And then we'll talk about the use cases. So what is it?
The way I got involved on this goes back to my background, if you like. I wrote a thesis, right, a PhD thesis, you know, about, you know, 30 years ago, which is called, you know, the contribution of artificial intelligence to real estate valuation, right?
So let's pause there for a second. Ray wrote a paper 30 years ago called The Contribution of Artificial Intelligence to Real Estate
Valuation
30 years ago.
Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. So no one was really applying, you know, what we call non-parametric model, right, for real estate value forecast, right? You know, I was invited by the Harvard University, actually, to work with some folks there. And that was very exciting, right? So that was coming from, you know, a friend of mine. He was doing a PhD in physics, right? And, of course, physics, they were much more advanced and sophisticated when compared to real estate. And then I remember that, you know, of course, you know, he gave me this idea. And so, like, yeah, you know, you can apply, you know, non-parametric, you know, statistical model for any possible forecast. I'm like, why don't we do, you know, for real estate? Then I perfectly remember I had a meeting with my professor at that point in time, and I mentioned, why don't we develop the neural network, right, you know, for real estate, you know, value forecast. And he was completely shocked, right? He was like, well, I have no idea what you're talking about, right? You know, we're talking about old style, you know, professor at that point in time. Mm-hmm. But he was good enough to give me credit, right, you know, for something which was completely new, right, in the context of an Italian university, as you can imagine. I believe that you have some passion for this, right? Mm-hmm. I want to, you know, let you go, right? And actually, I developed this thesis, and no one was doing it, right, you know, worldwide. So that was a very exciting time. And by the way, by talking about this, you remind me that, you know, I was a young kid, you know, going around in Cambridge University, right? I'm not a little bit older, I guess. Anyway,
for the record, we're still young kids, Ray. Don't tell anybody tell you otherwise.
Well, it's a relative game, right? Yes. You know, we decide, you know, we want to play with a relative game, right? I can be a baby, right?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, how I got involved in this. My boss was like, well, I guess, you know, you are the right guy to help PGIM Real Estate and the real asset business in general to understand how we're going to move our organization towards something which is much more forward thinking, right? I like to use these terms. How are we going to drive? How are we going to enhance the innovation metabolism, right, of a big incumbent business, which is PGM Real Estate, right? And so I remember I told, you know, my boss, I said, look, we're going to have 80% of the people, which they're going to look at me and say, well, I mean, you're a crazy guy. There is nothing for us here. It's not going to make me more money, you know, kind of things, right? But of course, my target is that 20% of the people, 25% of the people, the young people, et cetera, that they're going to buy into this. They're going to be the future of the company. And they're going to help me to drive the innovation metabolism of the organization. And that's exactly what's happening when it comes to this. Now, what is Real Asset X? As I said, you know, we have, you know, basically three pillars, right, you know, within the lab. You know, one is focusing on data intelligence, as you said, i.e., we're trying to build up a data lake, right? I.e., you know, having the data in the right place across all the business, which is not an easy task, as you can imagine. And of course, this data lake is not only built up, you know, for the use of, well, I want to have a place where I push on a button, I got all the statistics on my portfolio, but it's kind of built in a way that, you know, all this data can be then used, tokenized, right? You know, for any AI application or AI software development, right? You know, that's pretty much the focus there. Then there is a second pillar within the lab, which is we're basically building this R&D partnership with major university, major tech companies. And again, this is really about putting in place physical innovation center, right? You know, we have one in London with UCL, right, in Schroeditch, where, you know, we're going to have a physical place. We're going to basically hire, you know, PhD students for these PhD venture things that, you know, I mentioned before. And of course, based on a selective use cases, the PhD is going to start developing idea, making research with this mindset of commercializing the idea down the road. We have UCL in London. We have a discussion in Singapore with the university there. We did some work in Chicago with University of Chicago, more to come in US. We're actually having some good discussion in Abu Dhabi, right? We recently opened our office in Abu Dhabi. And as you can imagine, Abu Dhabi and Saudi, you know, they're both big time investing into everything which is looks like AI, you know, from software to hardware to, you know, big infrastructure. And they like having us as a partner in the region with the local university to develop another physical center. We're also dealing with tech companies, right? We have a partner like DeepKey, for example, right, which is the major, one of major European and now, you know, global company, which they have arguably one of the best sustainability data set, right? And of course, driving all this sustainability story. So this is really about the R&D things. And then the last pillar, which is also very important, is, well, you need some capital, right? So our goal is really launching, right, a VC fund, which is going to be then focusing on climate tech solution, right? And this is all early stage investing. As I said, right, you know, you need to develop, right, this company. Some of them grow, you know, for the growth story, but it's more like early stage. And that's pretty much the idea. And as I said, do you want to do it by hiring 30, 40 people, data scientists, and pretending that you're going to be top class developers, right, of new technology in a market which is super fast changing, as we know? The answer is no. Do you want to do it by selecting the right partner, which, of course, they're going to help you, right? And they change as the market change. That's exactly what we're doing. And that's why we're very exciting that, you know, we're having all sorts of discussion. And again, we're attracting very good companies.
You're still at the fairly early stages. How long has this been around?
This is 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah.
Okay, so 2 years of running with your university partners, with your tech partners. You've got offices or either real or virtual offices in three or four major cities around the world. What are the use cases? Give us an example of how you're using this information to make better decisions.
We got three, you know, ongoing right now. You know, the first is focusing on how you can make, as I said, assets much more operational efficient, right? There is a PhD, they're developing an AI software, right, you know, to optimize the HVAC and BMS equipment system. And of course, you know, this is in comparison, right, to the traditional software things. And they're analyzing all sorts of data, right, coming from the sensor, coming from the machine, et cetera. We are actually seeing, I met, you know, the PhD with the UCL team, that was, what, you know, a couple of months ago.
And UCL, so, that's University Central London?
College London, yeah,
Thank
of course.
You.
I met them a couple of months ago, and, you know, they're showing me And of course, materiality really matters, right? They can improve, and we're now tracking, right, the accurate, you know, the accuracy of all this data, that, you know, they can have a better energy performance, right, which goes all the way to 54% improvement, right? That's a clear example that, you know, if I can develop, you know, something like this, which is going to give us a much better story, right, when it comes to the efficiency of this building, this is something which you can sell in the market, right, of course. And by the way, you know, the venture capital, which works with the UCL, they have some interest, right? And we're having some discussion on how can we eventually commercialize, you know, this idea. That's the first one. The second one, which I really like, which can be, you know, sort of transformational if we manage to get there. We have a very smart PhD guy from Germany. He's actually, you know, researching on embodied carbon solution. We're trying to develop basically an AI software which is going to assess the footprint of every building in the world, right? In terms of what the desktop analysis, if you like, of the embodied carbon of you know, any building that you want to pick.
By the way, just a pause there. That's my favorite concept within the sustainability space. I think so much of what we do within the sustainability sector is about emissions, about the energy you use, the waste you produce, the water you use. Not enough is about the sticks and bricks in this building that if you knock it down, you could take you 30, 40 years to get the payback.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about sustainability in a serious way without touching what's happening on the embodied carbon side, that is not possible, right? I mean, half of the emission, right, you know, come from that side, which, of course, is the toughest side to tackle, I get it. But to give you a sense of what is this about, you know, it's basically developing, it's a little bit technical, it's called diffusion neural network, where you can combine all sorts of different data, including the image that you can get from the satellite, right, of every single building. And of course, through the use of the neural network, you can then start clustering the different color, right, of the buildings, and then associate how, you know, that material can be, you know, performing, which kind of material is, how much embodied carbon you can attach, right, to that material. And of course, you can also start developing synthetic data, right, which is the future of all these AI application in the context of this multi-model, if you like, you know, neural network, which I think is going to be the future, because, I mean, you can easily imagine that combining all this sort of different data, image, you know, R data, et cetera, it's not an easy one. That's why I'm saying it's a bit of a dream for the time being, but if we ever going to get there, it's going to be transformational.
There's two basic points here. When I look at artificial intelligence, data analysis, neural networks, as you put it, Ray, one is the operational side. So that's part A. But part B, the place where I still believe we're at the starting gates, notwithstanding how much work we've done on it, is predictive analytics. I think that operational efficiency or operational excellence may be in the fifth inning of a nine-inning game. I think that predictive analytics are in the first inning of a nine-inning game. What do you think?
Well, I mean, my thinking is the following, right? So we're going to for sure getting there, right? We're going to get in a place where you can really think of AI software being able to combine all sorts of different data, which we don't use right now, to make all this prediction, right, you know, much more accurate. What is missing, right? You know, what is missing is very simple. It's all about how you're going to collect, manage, and keep the data, right, in a place where you can be effective by using all this software. I mean, from a software standpoint, there is everything there, right? You know, to be as sophisticated as you want to be, right? From a data collection standpoint, we're still nowhere to some extent. I mean, we are in an industry where, you know, we still believe that by, you know, dealing with our own data, having our, you know, market insight and not sharing, you know, the data, it's a competitive advantage, right?
So it's been like that since the day I got into this business, and there's still a lot of truth there.
Actually, I was selling this story, right? I'm like, well, I mean, I got, you know, the people on the ground. I'm the one that knows everything that moves in the market. And of course, I don't want to share it with that. So that's the kind of cultural mindset which we need to drive within our industry. Because as we're going to drive this cultural mindset, you're going to have much more sharing of all this information. Of course, we're going to tap in all sorts of different information, which are very important to understand where the young people are going, you know, why a place got developed, you know, once compared to another places. These are all things which we need to really, and that's the main focus of the industry, right? You know, again, you know, if you ask me, from software standpoint, cheap development standpoint, everything is there. Actually, you know, we don't need, you know, actually the LLM model is much, much more sophisticated. We can tap into that kind of huge development. And imagine if we're going to get the data in place, again, structured and unstructured data in a comprehensive way, and we're going to train, you know, this model on a very specific use case, very much focusing on develop, you know, these are all adaptive model. They're not static. So they're going to become more and more efficient as we go, all the way to having this software really helping, right? You know, when it comes to making your prediction about what's going to be the new sub market, emerging sub market, helping you on portfolio construction, helping you on forecasting rental growth and things like that. You know, this is going to happen, right? The industry has to realize that we need to come together to basically sort out how we're going to manage all this data.
So before we get into the wrap-up on AI and Real Asset X and where it's going, just more broadly, let's talk real estate for a moment. Where do you have the greatest conviction right now, given all the volatility we've had in the last, not just in the last year, really the last several years with inflation, interest rates, the devaluation of real estate, which certainly was against what happened in the broader market? What are some of your best ideas, some of your greatest conviction in the next year or so within real estate?
So I think the way you're going to make money down the road, it's actually a different way once compared to the last 10 years, right? You know, last 10 years, we've gone through this market where it was all about picking your asset class. And then, of course, cap rate compression, right, has driven total return. We're going in a place where income grow, and of course, how resilient, right, is your cash flow is going to be your story, right? You know, that's where the return is going to come from. Now, if that's the realization, right, and of course, you know, we strongly believe so, what is the asset class where it's going to give you, you know, income grow and resilient income? So first and foremost, our biggest conviction is about what we call global living, right? Global living is everything which is residential for renting, which is to serve all the different cohorts, right, in any place in the world when it comes to all this demand, which is constantly changing, whether it's an old people, young people, you know, US, Asia, etc. But that's a basic needs. They need the space to live, right? You know, we got more than 50% of our portfolio, which is basically in the living sector. Multifamily, single family, student housing, senior housing, manufactured housing. We're really covering, you know, the whole spectrum there. Then the other one, which is, well, a broader definition of basic needs, right? Which is last mile logistic, right? Last mile logistic, it's all about, well, this is the new consumer behavior, right, of all of us, which I would call a basic needs, right? We're never going to go back, you know, to not using anymore the mobile phone for e-commerce, et cetera, which basically means that that piece, it's actually resilient by definition. And again, we are actually investing in what I would call last mile, you know, in particular, which is where all this logistic, right, is going to play for the long run. Again, you can argue that this is going to stay with us forever. Then, of course, data center, we are in the middle of this transformation. I mean, I'm a big believer that, you know, AI is going to change all our life, honestly, right? How long it's going to take, how this is going to play out, I don't know, but this is going to for sure be the case. And, of course, the first derivatives, right, of that transformation is actually data center, right? And it's a very good way to play the AI. You can play it in all sorts of different ways. But, you know, when it comes to physical asset, physical infrastructure, that is the play. And then the last one, which we have very strong conviction, it's about the credit. We're still in a place where, on a risk-adjusted basis, you can have probably the best proposition in the market right now. You can make extraordinary return by just being on the credit side. And when I say credit, it's anywhere between investment grade to high yield. And that's pretty much a place where we're investing quite a lot of energy because, I mean, it's kind of no-brainer right now.
I agree with you. I think credit is the asset allocation area I'm hearing the most from our investors is saying, if you can get equity type returns on a debt type vehicle, why wouldn't you do it?
And again, you know, this is from time to time, we have this window in the market. Can we assume that it's going to be always the case, right, that you can drive, you know, this kind of, you know, equity return with, you know, that risk? The answer is no, right? You know, it would be naive, right, assuming so. But for the time being, we're enjoying it and we really like it.
So there's one word that didn't come up on this show, but I got to ask because, well, we're in beautiful Henrietta House here. We're very proud of this building. Office. And office has a mixed reaction, but I will say that in the last, I would say, 4 or 5 months, I've seen more institutions saying, you know what, on a risk-adjusted basis, maybe there's something there. What do you think?
Well, offices, well, I mean, this concept, you know, being in a bifurcated market is now materializing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we went from, well, no one wants to touch office across the board, to realizing that, of course, there's a future for the office. I'm a strong believer that we as a human being, we want to connect with people. We don't want to be, you know, sitting on our place all the time. So the office space has got a future. Now, what's happening is pretty clear. Every piece of asset which is sitting in, you know, the right location has got the right specification and can attract, right, you know, can be compelling, right, for people coming to the office and sharing information. This is pretty much in demand. If you look at the rental story, right, you know, pretty much everywhere in the world, it's actually super strong. In some cases, you know, it's all-time high rental, right, on that piece of the market, right? Then you have the other side of the market, which is, you know, commodity, secondary stuff, which no one wants to go. That piece, which is fairly large, it's going to have, you know, trouble, and it will continue having trouble, right? You know, in most of the cases, in my opinion, we're going to end up in residual value for alternative use, right? You know, you have a piece of land, right? You got to figure out how you're going to eventually reposition, you know, that piece of land. And then I would say right now there is also the bifurcated market is migrating into what I would call a trifurcated market, i.e. there is a middle space, right, which is office, which they need quite a lot of capex to be then brought to, you know, class A specification, but they are sitting in a very strong location. And because the market is improving and the rental value is improving, now, you know, the metrics start kind of making sense, right, to invest this capex. And, of course, that piece of market will be the one for value add, transformation, retrofitting, whatever you want to call it, which will have a good story, you know, when it comes to value add. You know, by the way, when office for us is a very tactical opportunity, we have done very little, but recently we have done investment in Japan, in Tokyo, investment in Sydney, right, in the office space, because there is a recovery story there. Of course, Asia is much less affected, right, you know, by all these, you know, working from home, you know, kind of things. But there is certainly a place where you can make good money. You just have to be very discerning, right, on how to play with the office market.
Where is Real Asset X 2 years from now? How has it influenced PGIM's business?
On one side, for me, would be super positive, right, if Real Asset X can really help me and the organization to have people buying into how important is the transformation that, you know, we're living in, right? From a pure low-hanging fruit is, well, if all these things will help us to drive operational efficiency within our business, which, of course, will make everything much more efficient, I can have people focusing on the value-add part of the story, I'm pretty sure that we're going to get there in 2 years' time. So I'm pretty confident that, you know, this is the case, which is a very big win. And then the second one, which I think is, for me, it's the perfect way to measure success. If I can manage, right, you know, to basically launch one of these startup, right, and one of these company is going to have some good leg, right, in the market, and I can prove that the whole idea from coming up with a use case to making money by basically launching a startup company is going to be material. This is going to be a huge impact in my organization. And by the way, I'm going to attract a lot of potential partners, you know, to the lab.
Great. So operational efficiency on one side, which I think you're going to have immediate, you already had immediate success
with that.
Maybe that's the lower hanging fruit, as you put it. But the home run is to use the venture capital arm of this to create something that has real value.
I would call it, you know, I'm a dreamer, right, as you might, you know, imagine. So why not, you know, developing the new Facebook?
Well, that's a big ask, but I'm not saying you can't do that. I wouldn't question the vision, given that you had the vision 30 years ago, writing the paper on AI and real estate, which is really pretty remarkable. And here we are today, and it's becoming reality. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Ray Amabile, the co-CEO and global CIO of our friends at PGIM. Thanks so much for coming out today, Ray.
Thank you for having me.
For more on Real Asset X, along with the real deal on other investing ideas, insights, and informative work, look no further than our website, cbre.com/theweeklytake. There's related content and archived episodes featuring our coverage across the real estate spectrum. You can also find links to share your feedback, as well as ways to subscribe, rate, and review our show wherever you listen. We hope you'll join us again next week as we continue our international swing with more from the UK, including discussions about global investing and development around the world. Thanks for joining us. I'm Spencer Levy. Be smart, be safe, be well.